This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Guide to Everything, a podcast about everything. I'm one of your hosts, Tom.
And I'm Tim.
Tim, how are you doing this week?
Tom, I'm miserable. I'm sweaty and I'm soaking wet all the time.
Yeah, it is very hot in New York City right now. I can tell you that much.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, please, Tim, I apologize. You go ahead.
Tom, this heat is throwing off our rhythm.
Yeah. Well, also having to do it remotely.
People don't know that we're not in the same room.
No, they do. Tim, everybody has to know that social distancing is important. I've offered to you many times that you can quarantine with me in my home and you can just stay here. And that way we can record the show in person every week.
What percentage of our listener do you think assumes that this show is just one guy doing two different voices?
Boy, that would be so much easier if I could just do your voice. I think probably no percentage based on how often we talk over each other.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, you can do a lot with multi-track recording, Tom.
That's true.
I always wondered that on The Simpsons when like Smithers and Mr. Burns are talking to each other. And it's Harry Shearer doing both voices. Is he doing both back and forth, or is he doing one and then it's like, okay, I'm gonna do all Mr. Burns. I'm going to do this line and this line. And then he's like, roll it back. It's time for me to fill in with Smithers.
I imagine that they probably do it whichever way he prefers.
I know, but what does he prefer?
You'd have to ask him.
Listen, judging by Harry Shearer's reputation, they do everything the way that he prefers. Otherwise, he's not showing up.
Yeah. So, yeah, they might just, I imagine it's not back and forth that like most voice actors are probably like, once I get into a voice, I want to stay in that voice for a little bit.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be cool if it just looked like, hey, it's like the movie Split, which I've never seen the movie Split, but the M. Night Shyamalan movie. Tom,
oh,
your
right.
Favorite filmmaker?
Yeah, he's not my Signs is an underrated movie.
Well, you're just a big Mel Gibson fan.
a Gibhead.
Yeah. On screen, off screen.
I never liked Mel Gibson. Even before everybody found out he was horrible.
Tom, you love Signs. You still to this day reference Lethal Weapon constantly.
Well, Lethal Weapon movies are very good, but a lot of that's Danny Glover and Joe Pesci.
I mean, Joe Pesci didn't show up until, what, the third one?
Yeah, but still, he did a good job once he showed up, as Joe Pesci always does.
And then you said Mad Max Fury Road, quote, ruined the whole franchise because they wrote out Mel Gibson and put a, quote, chick in his place.
They didn't write out Mel Gibson,
That's what you said. That's what I remember you saying. You wrote it in a text message to me.
They've got Tom Hardy playing him because Mel Gibson's too old. That's all.
All right.
Man, you're going to be sorry you brought this up, Tim. Because have you ever seen this movie Nocturnal Animals?
No, I haven't.
It's on HBO Max. Is written and directed by Tom Ford, the fashion guy and son of Henry Ford.
What?
The fashion guy. You know Tom Ford, the fashion guy?
No, I don't know about fashion, though.
I don't think he was the son of Henry Ford.
No,
because sure.
He'd be 100 years old.
Sometimes, Tim, there's somebody recently who died who was the last person getting a pension from the Civil War.
Yeah, but he wasn't directing movies for HBO Max.
How do you know? HBO Max, they're hungry for content. It's not an HBO Max thing. It was a movie that came out 4 years ago. It's got Amy Adams and Jake Gyllenhaal. But it was weird to me because... Oh, and Michael Shannon, he won an Academy Award.
For this movie?
No, maybe. I think he did. I don't know. I think he did. He did. I'm going to say he did. Because he lost a lot of weight in the movie. And that if you do that, they'll give you an Academy Award. Or if you put on a lot of weight. If you put on a lot of weight, then you lose a lot of weight.
Sure. Yeah, they love it.
It was funny to me watching it just because in the movie, her husband is played by Armie Hammer, whose name sounds like Armin Hammer.
Right.
That wasn't the only. No, that wasn't the only. I am a big baking soda guy. But that wasn't the only reason it was funny, because I was telling my girlfriend, who was not interested whatsoever. I was like, oh, this is funny because Armie Hammer was supposed to play Batman in George Miller's Justice League. And now... And Amy Adams was Lois Lane in the Zack Snyder movies. So now it's like, oh, now she's married to Batman. And then I was like, holy shit, Michael Shannon was General Zod. This movie is like a whole Elseworlds of, Batman, Superman, DC Comics characters.
Now, you didn't get any traction with that anecdote with your girlfriend, so you brought it to me?
I brought it to the general public to see if they would be interested in my thoughts about this.
Yeah, here's where I think this is where you and I don't see eye to eye about movies. Mm-hmm. You think it's noteworthy, all these connections, when you're like, look, 80% of the movies that they make right now are superhero movies in one of these two universes.
Yeah.
So literally every actor is in one of these movies at some point. So like they're going to be in other real movies for, that aren't superhero movies. And if every time we're like, I can't believe the Scarecrow is talking to Alfred. That's a weird pairing.
Tim, Cillian Murphy was not in this movie. Don't be ridiculous. Although Jake Gyllenhaal did play Mysterio, but that's from the Marvel Universe, so that no connection to this movie. It was a pretty good movie. It was incredibly disturbing. I didn't like... There was like a whole scene in it pretty early on where it was just like, I hate this. I hate... Like, very well done. But it's like, boy, this I've never felt anxiety like this watching a movie. I hate it. Of like, oh, something very, very bad is going to happen. And there's nothing I can do about it as a viewer to prevent it.
Well, did you try at least?
I screamed at the TV at the top of my lungs. And I was screaming at Amy Adams, call Superman. Or at the very least, your husband Batman. Have them do something.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Even General Zod, he might be like, all right, I know normally I'm your enemy, but enough is enough.
And your girlfriend was watching this, sitting next to you watching as well?
No, she had walked out by that point.
Now, before we got started, Tom, mm-hmm. we were like, do we have anything to talk about up top?
Yeah.
And we both thought long and hard, and we were just like, well, normally we would talk about things that had happened to us since the last time we had an episode.
Yeah.
But I haven't, I don't think I have left my apartment since then.
You haven't left that office that you record in. You've just been sitting there patiently waiting until the next time we record.
Exactly. Well, it's easier than breaking down all this equipment and putting it somewhere else. Yeah. And then, you know.
I don't think people realize how much equipment's involved.
All the Bunsen burners and the beakers.
Yeah. To say nothing of the mechanized suits we wear.
So, yeah, we really had nothing. I think we should get right into the topic.
Yeah.
Because I know I have a lot to say about it.
And I think I do, too.
And the growing consensus, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I'm not one to read the reviews, but the growing consensus of people who have not heard our show before and then listen to it and then feel compelled to write a review is that they do not like the show.
Right.
And part of it is that they don't like that we talk about things that aren't the topic in the beginning.
I think a lot of them will come around once they hear the beginning of this when they're like, oh, I never thought about how Armie Hammer was almost Batman. And it is
he
weird.
Wasn't even Batman, and you're saying that's you can't believe they're married in the other movie?
He was almost. They were ready to make this movie, Tim. They had the costumes and everything.
What happened to it?
Oh, it was during the writer's strike. That's what like shut it down.
I mean, the writer's strike was only a couple months. They should have just, when that was over, just been like, okay, now we'll make the movie.
But, like, George Miller, he does, like, huge productions. They were, like, in Australia, like, ready to go. I still don't completely. I think it was, like, the writer's strike happened, and, like, Warner Brothers it wasn't necessarily like, oh, well, now we can't do a rewrite. I think Warner Brothers was like, oh, shit, the writer's strike's going on. Maybe we shouldn't be spending like a ton of money making this Justice League movie in Australia with George Miller. And they were just being too cautious and they canceled it.
We'll be discussing Chipotle after the break.
Tim, this week we're talking about Chipotle Mexican Grill. Famous chain of fast casual restaurants. In fact, one of the first fast casual restaurants to exist.
Depends on how you're defining fast casual, but
I'm defining
I would agree
as a level above fast food like a McDonald's, Burger King, Taco Bell, and a level below quick serve restaurant. Such as
no, that is a quick serve restaurant. A McDonald's is a quick serve. QSR.
No,
fast food.
Well, then what do you call like an Applebee's, TGI Fridays, Ruby Tuesdays?
A fast casual.
All right, they're a step below that. They're not. No,
I would
like
say
a
Chipotle's
different term.
An upscale QSR.
I'm gonna go crazy. No.
We're off to a terrible start. I don't think we've properly described just how hot it is in New York right now.
I'm just saying that they're a fast casual restaurant, and to me that puts them between a place where you don't get to see them make your food, and you don't get to make any kind of real decisions about what you're getting. You're ordering by number.
Tom, mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to apologize.
Yes.
And beg for your forgiveness.
Okay.
Fast casual does not offer table service.
Yes, thank you. That's the big difference.
But has higher quality food than fast food restaurants or QSRs. Fewer frozen or processed ingredients. I think that's debatable depending on what you're talking about here.
Right. Yeah, I think in general that's that, or at least marketing wise, that's how that most of the fast casuals push themselves.
Right. And what we call TGI Fridays and Applebee's falls into casual dining.
Oh, not so fast. Casual.
Right.
Casual dining. That makes sense. I was going to say franchise restaurant.
Yeah, but franchise restaurant could be anything.
Yeah. I mean, you could just have like a local, you know, like in New York, Junior's is, I guess they're not franchise. And like that doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily franchise restaurant because some of these restaurants, like corporate owns all of them. Chain restaurant is, right. I think, what I'm looking for. So, yeah, they sit in between, which at the time was a somewhat revolutionary idea of like, oh, you can go into a place and get something better than like a cheeseburger. But it's not a place where you're going to have to sit down and order. And I think that that's part of the reason why casual restaurants started offering like curbside pickup and stuff like that. That they realize, oh, not everybody's coming to Applebee's just for our ambiance and the kitsch up on the walls. Sometimes they just want something a little bit better than McDonald's, but they don't necessarily want to sit here and eat it.
Yeah, and I think it also had to do with the suburban lunch crowd, Tom.
Yeah.
When I had an office job on Long Island,
the quintessential suburbs, I would argue.
Yeah, I would order an Applebee's. For some reason, I would order a salad from Applebee's and do curbside pickup.
Uh huh.
Why wouldn't I just get a salad somewhere else, like a salad place?
Did you know of a salad place?
Yeah, I knew of several. I went there sometimes.
Yeah, I bet the Applebee's salad tasted better and wasn't actually good for you in any way.
That's true. But there was always like a ton of fried chicken in it.
Yeah, but you could like tell yourself like, no, I'm being good. But
Tom, I haven't eaten a salad in so long.
Oh, really? Whoa, geez, I can tell.
No, I mean, it's because I won't make a salad for myself. It's too much dang work. And now that I'm making most of my meals myself,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm not going to chop up a million things and put it together. I'm eating healthier on whole.
Yeah.
But I would have a salad. I would say for the last 3-ish years, I had a salad for lunch every weekday. And then the last 5 months, just no salad, not one salad.
I don't think I've ever made a salad at home that I've been like proud of in any way.
I don't know how to properly use lettuce besides putting it on a sandwich or a burger.
Yeah, it's always the lettuce placement that I'm looking at the way I put lettuce in a bowl and I'm like, this doesn't look right. I don't know what's going on, but this is not, if I got a salad from a place that I bought it from and it looked like this, I would send it back. And I'm not a person that sends things back, but it's just like, this doesn't look like a salad.
Yeah. Well, okay. Let's both get back on the salad train.
Yes.
Hey, send us your inspiration for how we should cut up our lettuce. Let's get back to Chipotle, though.
Yes. So part of the impetus of this is that I had Chipotle the other night. They offered me a very lucrative deal, which was that I could get one meal and they would give me another meal for free with the catch that I would have to come pick it up. They wouldn't bring it to me.
How did you find out about this deal?
They sent me an electronic mail about this deal.
Really? You're on the Chipotle mailing list.
Yeah,
huh?
Man, I'm on the Chipotle mailing list.
Do they know your birthday?
Yeah, they know my birthday and they're like, come on.
Do you get a free burrito on your birthday?
Maybe. It might be free guac or something like that.
Oh, I think that's what it is. I think it used to be. They used to give a free burrito away for anything.
Tim, they used to give free burritos to reporters covering the Timothy McVeigh trial.
Well, they deserved it.
Also, I remember. So, we'll talk about when they give free burritos away later. But yeah, I got Chipotle the other night. It was delicious. I ate more than I should have, and then I was so full I couldn't even eat ice cream that night.
Wow, Tom. Do you have ice cream every night? Did we go over this? You do generally, right?
If I can help it, yeah, I'll have ice cream every night.
Do you buy a big carton or do you buy little guys?
No, the big cartons.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, like, look, the Ben and Jerry's and the Haagen-Dazs, those are great, but like, A, they're expensive, and B, it's like, that's just, like, I can't do one of those a night. I'll be
monster. If you dole those out reasonably, those could last the better part of a week.
Yeah, I'm not going to dole it out reasonably, though, Tim. I'm going to eat half of it, put it in the freezer, and then go, I might as well just finish it. I'm not going to want that other half.
Yeah, but like an hour and 15
minutes
later.
Not even that I'm not going to want the other half. It's that I'm going to go in for the other half. And it's going to be less than I thought it was going to be, and I'm going to be disappointed. So I might as well just eat it all right now and not give future me any kind of false hope.
Yeah, I used to do a thing where I would eat more than I had planned on out of the carton and put it, you know, at maybe at 9 p.m., some post-dinner nice time. And then I'd do some stuff, maybe watch TV or whatever. And then before bed, I'd be like, well, let me just take one more bite of that ice cream that I put back in the freezer. And I would stand in front of the freezer and eat the whole thing.
So back to Chipotle, Tim. Chipotle, did I introduce you to Chipotle? Because my backstory is that when I was going to school at the University of Maryland, we got a Chipotle, I think, in like 2000, maybe 2001.
Okay.
And that was certainly the first time I had ever heard of it. I think it was maybe their first one in Maryland, maybe their first one like that far out east. But that's how I found out about it, because we had this small, pathetic little strip mall where there was a Chipotle, a Wawa, a Boston Market, a McDonald's, and like another place that like switched all the time.
It had a Chipotle and a Wawa, and you're calling it pathetic?
In retrospect, it's anything but. Maybe like a Blockbuster. Jeez.
That is the coolest strip mall on earth.
Especially
in 2000, 2001.
Yeah, I guess I did spend a lot of time there.
I would go to, if there was a Wawa within a mile of where I live right now, I'd go there for two meals a day.
Yeah.
At least.
For people that aren't in an area that has Wawas, Wawas are like an upscale 7-Eleven that has a sandwich bar. And even in like when I was in school, again, you know, it's 20 years ago at this point, they had touch screens to order your sandwiches. This is maybe like the first time I had seen a touch screen out of Epcot, except for Epcot Center in Disney World. It's like, not only is this futuristic technology, I can use it to tell them what I want on a sandwich. That's great, because it's 3 a.m. and I'm way too drunk to tell somebody in words what I want. But you're gonna show me like pictures of sandwich ingredients? That's great. I'm gonna make a sandwich that I'd be ashamed to say out loud, but I'll happily order through a machine.
But we're here to talk about Chipotle.
Yeah.
No, you did not introduce me to Chipotle. As much as you'd like to.
You should have come down to Maryland. I would have introduced you to Chipotle. I know I introduced other friends of ours to Chipotle.
You introduced me to Quiznos.
Oh, did I?
Yeah. There was a point in time, it was a brief window, when Quiznos was
Yeah, it was upscale. Really good, yeah.
It's like, they toast it. They have this contraption. You won't believe it. It's a conveyor belt that goes into some toasting mechanism, comes out the other side. Perfect.
Yeah, there was a brief window where Quiznos was the upscale Subway, and then 6 months later they were like, we're just Subway now.
Yeah.
We're gonna have the same standards. But without a pedophile as our mascot, which honestly they should have. Man, I would have eaten so much Quiznos if Quiznos's ads were just like, our subs are toasted and we didn't give a pedophile millions of dollars. Why not? Why didn't they do that? That would have been great marketing.
We didn't make you watch commercial after commercial of a pedophile holding up big pants.
Right. Who's like not even charismatic, not even like charming and doing a good job as a spokesperson, just like an awkward guy.
Yeah, like very clearly a pedophile.
I don't think he was clearly a pedophile, but it was clear like, oh, there's something with this guy. He's weird. Anyway.
Yeah, but we wish him well.
We don't wish him well. You should. Hey, I wish he'd burn in hell. How about that?
He stinks. He was trying to get out of jail recently, right?
Well, everybody's trying to get out of jail with COVID. I don't blame him, but.
No, this was like a couple of years ago. I think he was just kind of like, I'm a family man, so come on. I had kids.
Oh, I thought you were saying, you know, they had gone in there and he had tied a bunch of bed sheets together or something.
Yeah, they pulled back that picture of a submarine sandwich, the poster that he had up on his wall, and he'd been digging a hole behind it.
He had tied a bunch of his big old pants together. He was looking to parachute out of there.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Tom?
Yes.
What's your social battery like right now?
Beep.
Oh.
Boop.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Uh-huh.
Tom, I'll tell you from my perspective, since you're avoiding the question.
Uh-huh.
My social battery feels a little drained right now.
That was what that second sound was.
But
I had to do the going up. To show you the going down.
You gotta go up to get down.
That's what my first single's about.
It's weird. I feel kind of drained socially, even though you can attest I don't do much socially.
Yeah, and you enjoy social things, but
I do,
but
and
it drains you.
Yeah, I don't know. It can be very easy to ignore our social battery, which is kind of what I'm doing right now, and spread ourselves thin. Or just not know, kind of like, you know, where the optimal socialization is for
you.
You
want to be a shut-in, but you can't be a party animal.
Yeah, what's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Mm-hmm. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more time alone. I don't know, maybe you need a little bit of both. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Tom, we are, as everybody knows, very pro-therapy on this podcast.
Yes.
Anybody can benefit from therapy. It's not just for people, you know, dealing with trauma.
Yeah, or going through tough times.
Yeah, it's helpful for learning positive coping skills and setting boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself, Tom. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, like you, Tom. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/complete guide today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/complete guide.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
So no, Tom, you didn't introduce me to Chipotle. What the hell are we talking about? It's so hot.
Chipotle,
as suburban parents call it.
Yeah, so Chipotle, I did some digging. I mean, not really digging. I just did some reading about Chipotle. They started in Denver, which I knew. Mm-hmm. But, like, I thought it was more of a, like, upstart, you know, like a Papa John's situation. Although I found out it was like a Papa John's situation times 10, where basically this guy, I think he's still the CEO, Ells?
No, he's not. Okay. Steve Ells was the founder, was the CEO until 2017. But he was the founder. But I think I know where you're going with this. His father, Bob Ells, had a big hand in helping launch the business. But I do want to take it back a little bit.
Okay.
Because here's the scuttlebutt on Steve Ells. When he was in, you know, growing up and in high school and college, he was really good at cooking. He would do kind of upscale meals for his friends and stuff.
Yeah, well, he went to the Culinary Institute of America.
Well, yeah. Let's not get ahead of me, Tom. Okay. Telling the story here. I'm spinning a yarn. I'm giving you the scuttlebutt.
I didn't know you had done some on-the-ground reporting.
Yeah. So his dad, Bob Ells, mm-hmm. Was like, hey, I'll make a deal with you.
Bobbles.
If you work a year doing anything related to restaurant work, waiting tables is good enough, something like that, and then tell me you really love the restaurant business, I'll pay to send you to a culinary college, but I have a condition. It has to be the best culinary college in America.
Wow.
It's Bob Ellis.
Ellis?
That was
no,
a quote
Ells.
From Ells. Ells, yeah. So he did. So... He worked in a restaurant or whatever.
Yeah, but that's not a very, like, I'll tell you what. If you do this, I'll pay for you to go somewhere, but it has to be the most expensive place. That's not really a threat.
This comes from the Bloomberg article, Tom. Chipotle, the definitive oral history.
Ooh.
Mike Bloomberg interviewed a bunch of guys and was just like, I really like Chipotle this much that I'll...
Wow.
Yeah.
And a little guy like Mike Bloomberg, I can't imagine he can eat more than half a burrito in a sitting.
So anyway, Steve Ells went to CIA, Tom, but not the CIA you're thinking.
Yeah, right.
And he came back. He's like, all right. And he started working in San Francisco and saw all the burritos and stuff. And he's like, oh, that's great. And then he went back to his dad and he's like, cool. Well, thanks for sending me through undergraduate and then 6 years of the Culinary Institute.
Six
of
years?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
According to Bob, yeah. And then he was just like, okay, well, I just want to open my place. I just need $75,000. And then his dad was just like, okay, I'll give you $75,000. And he opened a restaurant.
I read that it was $85,000.
Well, Bob himself said $75,000 to Mike Bloomberg, America's favorite mayor.
Well, I had read that they did the math on this first Denver restaurant. And they figured out that if they sold 107 burritos a day, they would make a profit.
See, now the numbers I got, Tom, is that mm-hmm. the break even was 114 burritos a day.
Well, yeah, these numbers are wildly off.
What the hell is going on here?
But then within like a month or so, they were selling 1,000 burritos a day, which boggles the mind to think about that many burritos. And to think about...
Well, it wasn't just one guy eating them.
Yeah, but he probably got back in line a few times.
Pre-Subway Jared?
Right. It might have been Jared eating all these. That might have been why he had to go to Subway.
Yeah.
Although I do know that when I was at Maryland, after that had been open for a couple of years, they said that Maryland was the most profitable or the most heavily trafficked Chipotle in the country. So I imagine they were making more than 1,000 burritos a day.
I have no concept of, I mean, I remember in the early days when Chipotle's were
opening, there was always
expanding,
a line out the door.
It was bonkers. Like, people would be like, well, all right, I guess I'll wait on a 25-minute line for a burrito.
Well, but that was always the crazy thing. The lines were long, but they got through those lines in no time.
Yeah.
Because I remember at school, it was the line was always out the door. I can remember like a handful of times that I saw the door close and it was like, oh shit, I already ate dinner, but like, let's go. Cause, the line's actually short enough to be contained within the very long restaurant. But that was the thing. Like at first when it opened, it was like, oh, I'm not going to go there. Those lines are always insane. But then you realize like, no, that's like an always moving line. It's like, the Haunted Mansion in Disney World, where they're just always moving.
They should have had the moving floor along with your burrito as it went down the line.
They should have asked you, is the ceiling getting higher or are you getting smaller?
Yeah, they should have made it generally spookier in most ways.
I have that feedback from most restaurants.
Yeah, except for the Jekyll and Hyde Club.
Of course, except
perfect for amount of spooky.
Well, my feedback there was it was too spooky.
I think the Jekyll and Hyde Club is one of my top five favorite restaurants.
Do you want to explain what it was? It doesn't exist anymore, right?
I don't think so. They had two locations in New York.
The Slaughtered Lamb was the other one.
Yeah, it was like a tourist trap kind of situation. One was in Times Square where you would go in and there was just spooky stuff. It was a theme restaurant where spooky things would happen, like mummies would be there and Dracula would come out of the wall and like sing a song or something, I think.
I've never been there, but I did go once to Mars 2112. Remember that?
Yeah, I love high-concept, touristy theme restaurants.
Yeah, there were just these weird like, there was a time in Times Square where there were just these, like, big-budget, weird themed restaurants that, like, I don't know, didn't have, like, a big brand behind it or anything. It was just, like, Wall Street banker on cocaine came up with this idea, and here we are.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, whenever I came to the city with my parents from Long Island when I was a kid for like a day out, we'd go to one of those places and it would be great. It's like my fondest memories of New York City, and I've lived in this city pretty much my entire life.
So the first Chipotle in Denver, immediate hit. Daddy puts in another 1.5 million.
Tom, can I tell you something?
What?
It wasn't until they opened their second store that they came up with going along the line and watching somebody make your burrito step by step. And the only reason they did that is because it was a former place called House of Pies that had this case where they would display all their pies, and they didn't want to, or they were too cheap to kind of renovate it. Just walk along it. Yeah, and this is how you do it. And this Steve Ells was just kind of like, hey, this House of Pies. made me a millionaire. I was going to try to come up with some sort of rhyme.
The sass of pies ain't no lies.
Made me a rich guy.
I mean, he was already a millionaire, Tim. How else would he have been able to put in the $1.5 million?
Well, from what I read is that his parents, Bob and Barbara, raised $1.3 million from a handful of wealthy friends, which was its only private offering ever.
That not McDonald's. McDonald's wasn't also like a private. That wasn't.
I mean, McDonald's kind of just like bought 90% of it.
Right, but that was before the IPO.
Yeah, but I think what they mean is that like going and raising money from, you know, McDonald's came and was like, we want to essentially buy your business. We want to add you, like.
Well, no, McDonald's did not have the, Tim, you're falling for a common misconception, which was that McDonald's owned the majority of the business. McDonald's was the biggest investor, but they were not a majority investor, as far as I can tell.
Okay. but at some point, his parents went to their rich friends. Bob Ells, by the way, was a pharmaceutical executive.
Oh, okay. So he was helping probably cure diseases and stuff.
Yeah. That's what they do. Part of it is.
Yeah, maybe. He could have been one of those guys. He could have also been like, we got something real addictive here. Let's send our NFL cheerleaders to these different doctors and get them to start prescribing it. I don't know if that's still the case, but that was always one of my favorite facts, that the number one job that NFL cheerleaders had during their offseason was pharmaceutical representative.
Yeah, definitely.
Transferable skills.
I mean, pretty much. You get some goons all riled up.
That's true.
The goons I'm talking about here are doctors. Doctors.
People,
medical
people have gone to medical school for a long time. So McDonald's was a big investor early on, though. But they apparently where the split was, they wanted a drive-through and breakfast options. Because that's what they know. And they were like, and also you should have a mascot, maybe a clown.
A real creepazoid clown.
Yeah. They wanted drive-thrus and breakfast options, which like is weird to me because I've rarely seen standalone Chipotles that could support a drive-thru.
Mm-hmm.
They probably do breakfast nowadays. But the breakfast, it's like, well, what would you have? Like scrambled eggs in a thing?
Yeah, you breakfast know. Burrito.
Yeah.
You ever hear of a breakfast burrito?
Look, I love breakfast burritos. Numbskull? But I want my eggs in a breakfast burrito made fresh. I don't want them sitting there. I mean, I guess they go through things pretty quickly. They should have listened to McDonald's. They should have started doing breakfast stuff.
No, I don't think so. McDonald's also wanted them to rename the business Chipotle Fresh Mexican Grill.
Yeah.
Because Baja Fresh had launched.
Well, like, yeah. Because there were all these also-rans, Qdoba, Moe's, Baja Fresh.
Moe's is pretty good, Tom.
I don't think I've ever had Moe's.
Moe's really leans on garbage melty cheese in their stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They also, this is bonkers to me after knowing the history of McDonald's and Ray Kroc, but McDonald's encouraged Chipotle to regionalize their menu. So they're like, oh, Kansas City has to have a barbecue option.
Ugh.
For their burrito, which, from what I understood from the founder starring Michael Keaton, mm-hmm. if you go off menu on a franchise, the founder's going to come in there and punch you in the face on a golf course.
Yeah, yeah. Ray Kroc did not like people going off script, and also whenever places do shit like that, It's like, okay, Kansas City, we want you to have Kansas City barbecue sauce. And it's like, no, dummy, don't do it there where people in Kansas City are going to be like, this sucks. This isn't, you know, it's, I've never
gone. Yeah, there are 100 places that do it better because it was invented here.
Yeah. Nobody.
We don't need McDonald's to tell us how to do this.
Nobody here in New York City is going to like a Domino's or Papa John's and getting like their promotional New York style pizza.
Yeah, I wouldn't be so sure about that, Tom.
I don't think so because you can get New York style pizza anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's like, true. No, I'll just. I get it for if they wanted to do Kansas City barbecue. If I went to Chipotle tomorrow and they were like, we have Kansas City barbecue style burritos, I'd be like, oh, let me try one of those because I'm not from Kansas City. I'm a Philistine and I'm not going to know what's good Kansas City barbecue.
I don't know what the hell happens in Kansas City. Yeah, I'm not even sure which Kansas City you're talking about.
Right.
There's two and one's not even in freaking Kansas.
You tell me this Kansas City barbecue, I'm inclined to believe you. Because that's not where I'm from.
McDonald's also did another weird thing, Tom, on a couple levels. Chipotle isn't franchised.
Yes.
All their stores are owned and operated. Yeah. By the corporation. But McDonald's was just kind of like, we're going to let McDonald's franchisees open up Chipotle's if they want, if they can afford
it. Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Which is bonkers, one, because Chipotle's weren't franchised.
Right.
And number two, McDonald's never lets their franchisees own another brand's franchise,
that I did know.
So, like, which is that really
I did
rare.
Know something that has no benefit for me to know.
Yep.
Something completely irrelevant to my life, my job, my interests.
Situation you'd ever find yourself in.
Right. I guess if a McDonald's franchisee ever asked me his opinion, should I open up a Wendy's? I'm like, oh, you gotta double check that contract, man. You can't. Oh, good thing I asked you, Tom.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of audacious to be like, let's say you're a really rich guy and you're just like, all right, I want to open a McDonald's franchise. I think there's a good line of business to get into. And McDonald's is just like, you're a McDonald's man now. That's it. You're nothing else. Say goodbye to everything else.
For a long time, there had never been a McDonald's that closed due to like lack of business. So opening a McDonald's franchise was seen as, you know, a sure thing, a sure bet. Hmm. So I get them having had those kind of stipulations where they're like, no, people are dying to open up McDonald's. So
yeah, and then you're going to also go and open up a Jiffy Lube?
Yeah.
You piece of shit. No way. Not on my watch.
Not a Jiffy Lube, but like a Burger King. Yeah, conflict
no,
of interest.
Anything, any franchise.
I know, and that's why I
could see why they wouldn't want you opening a direct competitor.
Right, but I think that they've got to be like, look, we got to draw the line somewhere, and we're just going to draw it in a very broad place. Which makes me think of another instance I was thinking of that I'd read about, where apparently, I think it was a mall that Chipotle early on was going to go into, and Panera Bread sued because they said they had an exclusive contract with that mall to be the only sandwich provider. And they claim that a burrito is a sandwich, a type of sandwich.
I don't want to do this, Tom.
Thank goodness the federal court, I think it went all the way to the federal court, ruled against them that they're like, burritos aren't sandwiches. This is fine.
I don't want to get into any of this, Tom.
They tried to claim. I saw something that they were like, oh, they said like burritos and tortas, and I was like, Chipotle doesn't have tortas.
No, they have a very streamlined, simple menu.
Yeah, that's their
and
whole
that's
thing.
One of the that's the genius of it.
Right,
Tom. Who did you say sued Chipotle?
Panera Bread.
Yeah, you say Panera Bread.
Yeah.
I know people that say Panera Bread.
Well, those people are idiots.
Let's stop at Panera Bread.
You should sue them. The emphasis is on Panera. That's the name of the place.
Yeah. All right.
I don't. You don't say, oh, we should go to McDonald's hamburgers.
Yeah. Weigh in the comments.
Tim, once again, there are no comments. Leave a 5-star review and let us know what you think.
So anyway, McDonald's at the time also invested in Pret and Boston Market.
I knew about Boston Market. I did not know about Pret. Pret,
you know what?
Which is by far my favorite quick serve restaurant.
I would like to agree with you. It's okay. It's good. It's good.
What's
it's
your
great.
Favorite?
Maybe Chipotle.
I mean, Chipotle is probably my actual favorite, but no.
No, Pret's good in a pinch. I like Pret.
Pret's
better. More versatile.
Yeah. Look, if I'm hungry.
I don't feel gross whenever I finish a meal. From
exactly.
Pret. But I can if I want to. Exactly. They got some melty bullshit there that I can.
You've got options. Look, if I'm hungry, nothing is getting in the way between me and a Chipotle. But if I'm not insanely hungry, and all the way down to like, I don't know, all the way down to I'm not hungry right now, but I should eat because I'm not going to have the ability to for a while. Pret on Manger is a place where I ain't a stranger.
So in the 90s, McDonald's was kind of like, look, our stock price like is predicated, like we need constant growth because
right. And look, the Arch Deluxe didn't work.
We're screwed. and they were like, we've kind of reached saturation on McDonald's.
Yeah.
We need to like open up other restaurants. Mm-hmm. So they're just like, let's find these other restaurants and do it. And they did it. But a thing that they did, they were doing their all the corporate guys from McDonald's were doing their due diligence, because at the time, this was 1998, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Chipotle was still only in the Denver area.
Yeah, it was a very small.
It was like 13 stores or something, or restaurants, but it was still very small. The workers in store number 2 saw a limo pull up, and all these guys, they all kind of, quote, looked the same, big guys in suits, and they all had these rings, M rings on.
Whoa.
Little diamond rings with M on them.
Oh,
and they
man.
Went, they got online, and they ordered one of everything, and then went back into the limo and just sat in the parking lot and ate all the food.
That's awesome. The McDonald's cabal.
Yeah, and all the workers at the store were like, what's happening? Should we call the police? Should we call the FBI?
Yeah, that's extreme. Also, is there just like a McDonald's limousine idling for like, do the executives frequently take field trips to places?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably I guess. A whimsical clown car.
I guess they were in Denver, so it was probably like they all took a flight out, and it's probably like, we all want to go there, and that's why we're going here. We're all going to try it. So it's like, if it's between a limo or like a depressing passenger van.
Yeah, and also these guys are all making 7 or 8 figures a year in their jobs. They're not going to eat burritos in a freaking like Mazda 626 or like a Toyota Camry.
I mean, they could have eaten them in the restaurant, and that might have given them an idea of like the ambiance of the restaurant and stuff like that.
They're not going to do that. They didn't want to eat with commoners.
Well, they probably wanted to talk a lot about the food and probably didn't want to let on. Like,
yeah,
all these weird guys came and they just like picked apart these burritos and talked about them extensively. Which brings me to, so nobody's going, or at least in New York, nobody's going to work right now. But my writing space was in Union Square, which is not only close to the Chipotle test kitchen, but close to, I don't think it's there anymore. I think they moved everybody, but the Chipotle headquarters.
Really?
Yeah. And also where the former Chipotle chief marketing officer lived. He lived in Union Square. And I had been in the test kitchen and see a bunch of suits like talking about things. And I would sit there and just be like, huh? Let me see if I can listen in. But they're like, oh, the growth margins, we're in the black, not the red. You know, all these terms I didn't understand.
Yeah.
But famous to people like me and you in the fast food industry. The CMO of Chipotle, Mark Crumpacker, got into big trouble a few years ago. He was charged.
Crumpacker?
Well, that's what Ells probably said. He was charged in 2016. He was indicted as part of a cocaine ring. The thing is, though, honestly, it was like he wasn't part of a cocaine ring. He was just a preferred customer of a cocaine ring. Because I remember, like, it is a little unfair. I remember reading about this at first. And it was like, what the hell? Why is the CMO of Chipotle involved in a cocaine ring? Like, that doesn't seem like... I'm sure he makes a lot of money at Chipotle. He would have to be pretty high up in a cocaine ring to match his Chipotle salary, which just really not only seems like it's not worth it, but seems like too much work for one man to be, you know, doing. These are two 80-hour a week jobs.
Tom, have you learned nothing from Breaking Bad and its prequel, Better Call Saul, and Gustavo Fring and the Los Pollos Hermanos?
Los Pollos Hermanos looks like a real good chain. That's a regional chain, Tim. It is not a national chain.
That's true.
And there was no implication that he was using Chipotle's resources to move this stuff around. So basically it turned out that he was just like a real, a valued customer of this cocaine ring. And
A drugs man.
He had had cocaine delivered 13 times that they had on wiretap, and it was $3,000 worth, which I was kind of surprised because I, you know, did the quick back of the page math, and that's $230 a trip of cocaine.
Is that expensive for cocaine? Probably not for good cocaine, right? I don't know anything about cocaine. I've never seen cocaine.
I assume it's not that expensive, but I don't know how frequently those trips were happening. So it's like, oh, if somebody was coming by every night and this guy was just a dope and not being like, hey, I'm going to buy like, I guess it's not a dope. I guess when you're doing cocaine, you can't be like, well, I'm going to save some money and just buy in bulk. I'm going to buy a month's worth of cocaine because then you're just going to do all that cocaine.
Yeah, or it's kind of a liability to have so many drugs on you at any one time.
Right. So I think it was probably, he was like, I'm trying to keep this under control. I'm ordering like $230 worth of cocaine every time. That's like a night's worth of cocaine for me, maybe a friend or two.
Yeah, you got to think the CMO of Chipotle was buying the cocaine for, you know, he probably had some ne'er-do-well friends. The CMO of lesser chains.
Oh,
and they would hit the town together, and he'd be like, "Hey, I brought the coke because I'm on top of the world. Nothing's ever gonna knock me off this pedestal."
Yeah, well, this did, although not really. And I have to give Chipotle credit here because they didn't fire him after all that happened. And apparently, it's because he had been with the company for a long time, and I think they were just kind of like, I don't know, he's doing his job well, although he might have been doing his job well, but at the time, it was when Chipotle was going through their E. coli phase.
Right.
Where they had an insane amount of, like, people getting very sick from Chipotles around the country. So I think it was probably more that they just, like, really needed their marketing. It was like, look, the marketing for Chipotle has always been great. That's not the problem right now. The problem is with our supply chain and with our preparation. now is not the time to fire our chief marketing officer for getting busted buying Coke when otherwise he's doing a pretty good job. Because if we didn't have good marketing right now, literally nobody would come to these restaurants.
Right. And they just said, now, crumb packer.
Yeah.
We're going to teach you a lesson. You go out and you snort all of this cocaine and then tell me how you feel. Then tell me if you ever want to snort cocaine again.
Yeah. Like, we're going to make you do all this cocaine and see if after that's all done, you still want to do some cocaine.
Guess what he did? His appetite was even more insatiable.
He has two websites, by the way. He left in 2018. It had apparently nothing to do with this. And I assume that's true because he got, you know, he's a rich guy. He got the charges dismissed. He never suffered any consequences for this. But he has markc.co and markcrumpacker.net, which leads me to believe somebody's got markcrumpacker.com. And, you know, he's probably so mad about that because...
No, you know what? It's not worth it at this point. People know. People understand.
Look, he's got both of these sites with his resume, Tim. I think he's looking for a job right now. Maybe we should hire him.
I would only if we could
get some coke.
Angrily call him into our office.
Crumbacker, where's my cocaine?
did he oversee the Farmed and Dangerous comedy web series that Chipotle produced in 2014?
I'm sure he did. That was prime time for him.
That was a weird situation.
I don't remember that.
Ray Wise, who you might know from Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Played the head of a PR firm for a fictional mega corporation called Animoil.
Okay.
And it was all about how factory farms are bad, which I guess was cool, but it was also like, I don't know. Chipotle has always been a little suspect to me because they're always like, yeah, no, we're on your side, guys. We hate the corporations, man. Yeah. We hate factory farms. We don't want people to be, you know, mistreating animals. And like Steve L's, the McDonald's people, when they first invested, were like, hey, you want to come out and see the farms? You want to see the chickens?
Hey, you want to come see how the sausage is made?
And he came back white as a ghost, and he was just like, I don't like this at all.
Yeah, I read about that too, that it was after that that he was like, all right, we're going to start doing all free range.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of that is you know, smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, horse shit marketing.
And a lot of it is for the PR and the marketing, but I mean, they're better than some.
Yeah.
They're better than most, maybe, in the quick service game.
Yeah.
Tom, there's so much I want to talk about. Do we need a part two on this? Because we haven't even gotten into the menu or anything.
We might need a part two. We'll see how mad people are at this part one.
Yeah.
I didn't even... Well, all right. We're not getting into the menu yet, so let me talk about this real quick. Because I was surprised. Mark Crumpacker... His apartment in Union Square was a $2.5 million apartment, which, you know, this was reported as like, oh, I mean, obviously you need to be rich, but like, oh, you lived in a $2.5 million apartment. And I was like, you can get a $2.5 million apartment in Union Square? Like, that place must have kind of sucked.
Yeah, it's a six-floor walk-up.
Yeah, studio apartment.
Yeah.
Because Union Square is insane, the real estate there. So I was kind of surprised and kind of wondered, like, oh, is it $2.5 million that he just stays at? Like, this is, you know, it has a full-time staff or whatever. It's a little bit nicer than a hotel room. and cost us a little bit less than if he just stayed at a hotel every time he was in New York. Because they also said that he had a $30,000 a year allowance for a car and $35,000 a year allowance for housing. It's like $30,000. What car costs $30,000 a year to lease as a company car? Did he have like a Ferrari as his company car? Did he have a fleet of cars? Also, why did he need a car if he lived in Union Square? The headquarters was in Union Square and the test kitchen was in Union Square. Where was he taking this company car to?
I don't know. The Viper room to do cocaine.
He was driving all the way to Los Angeles to go to the Viper room.
He was driving to Los Angeles every Friday night to party.
And $45,000 a year for housing? Like, it's always insane to me, these like corporate executive, high-level, you know, C-level executives where it's like they get money for housing. Where it's like, no, the guy can, you're giving him millions of dollars, he'll figure out housing.
He has a salary and stock options.
Yeah. Why does he need housing money?
I will say this, though. Chipotle does have a good program where if you work full-time for Chipotle, they will pay for your college. And it's certain colleges, you'll get a free...
Yeah, they would. Yeah, look, they're not going to give you a full ride to Hamburger University. They're not out of their minds.
Oh, no, come on. They're not dumb. But they will also, if you don't go within their network of partner colleges, I think it's still something like they'll give like $5,000 or $6,000 a year towards tuition. And the only thing is you have to work at Chipotle for 6 months after you graduate.
Okay. Well,
which after graduating college to have like a stable job for 6 months is actually kind of a you know, some places are like, yeah, you have to stay with us for 5 years after, otherwise you have to pay it all back. But 6 months is nothing, Tom. I haven't left my house in almost 6 months.
But do you have to like do certain majors? Is it one of those things? I would look at the fine
probably.
Print. Yeah, it's probably
I mean, you have to major in cutting up chickens. Yeah, but they, if you know, that's relevant, not just at Chipotle, other places.
Also, I found, look, I'm still on Crumb Packer here. He, in 2015, his overall compensation was $4.3 million, which even more drives home the idea of like a $2.5
$35,000 for housing.
Well, but also the... You know, if somebody makes $70,000 a year, they don't go and buy a $35,000 home. And then they're like, well, this is it. This is my, you know, and no, I have a great job and I consistently make $70,000 a year, but I'm just going to buy a $35,000 home. And that's all I'm going to, like, he makes way, especially in New York, where it's very common that half, if not more, of your salary goes towards rent or your mortgage.
I like that you're clowning on this man for only having a $2 million apartment.
$2.5 million.
What a jerk.
What an idiot.
What a loser.
Get a nicer place, you knucklehead.
Yeah, that, he's a good man.
He is. Well, as long as he's packing up them crumbs.
Tom, all right. Yeah, we had to do a part two because... Okay. All we talked about here was
corporate
business, man. Corporate.
Yeah. Look, and sure, they're going to be showing this. They're going to be playing this in a lot of business classes, a lot of MBA courses.
Yeah, there's going to be required listening for most serious MBA programs.
Yeah, but maybe next week we're going to do part two, or maybe later. Yeah, next week.
Let's do it next week, and that way we don't have to think of a topic next week.
Right. And then that way, maybe, look, all the people that didn't like this, keep it to yourselves. It's not going to matter.
Tom,
part two is coming whether you like it or not.
Tom, I have a great way to wrap up part one, the discussion of Chipotle corporate.
Well, now would be the time.
After the plugs.
Oh, okay.
But stay tuned because there's a thought experiment coming up.
I was going to start the plugs with The Complete Guide to Everything is a production, like a, just a random. If you like the show, tcgt.com. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/completeguide. Follow us on Instagram at tcgte. You can follow and follow us on Twitter at Complete Guide. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Tom Reynolds.
You can follow me at Your Pal Tim.
And if you want to support the show, check out our sponsors. Also, check out patreon.com/completeguide for Books the Podcast, our secondary podcast. This month, we're reading Devil in a Blue Dress by Walter Mosley. I'm reading it. I'm telling Tim about it. You can hear about that and all the other books we've read at patreon.com/completeguide. Save some money on books. Just listen to us doing it.
Nice.
We don't read the books to you, to be clear.
I mean, we should start doing that.
You can't do that. That's
why not?
Copyright infringement.
It's behind a paywall.
I think you're getting a little too comfortable behind the paywall. That's another incentive. Hey, if you want to hear some stuff that could maybe get us in trouble, patreon.com/completeguide.
Reddit.com/r/TCGTE
and Discord at Complete Guide on Discord.
Why the hell didn't we standardize what?
Because
the,
some places it's available, some places it's not.
You can email us. We never say that you can email us at thecompleteguidetoeverything@gmail.com.
But you just did.
Yeah. All right, Tom. It was funny to me that you thought Steve Ells was still the CEO of Chipotle.
Oh, I know who is.
Something
yeah.
bonkers happened a couple of years ago. And this was in the midst of all their...
E. coli problems, norovirus.
Poisoning half the country.
Yeah. If you go on their Wikipedia page, by the way, the vast majority of their I was going through their Wikipedia and I'm like, God, this article's so long. And I was like, oh, 75% of this are different sickenings that have happened.
So he was replaced. He kept his chairman position, but they brought in this guy, Brian Nickel.
Yeah.
Who was the CEO of Taco Bell.
Yes. And he's, well, we'll talk about it next week, but he is really Taco Bell-ized Chipotle.
He has. In not unconstructive way. I don't think he's ruined the essence of what Chipotle stands for.
We'll have to talk about it next week, Tim.
And here is my thought experiment for you, Tommy boy.
Okay.
One of them disappears tomorrow, Taco Bell or Chipotle.
Oh,
which
shit.
One do you want to remain?
And I have to answer this week?
I think the answer's simple. And we're going to forget by next week.
The answer is Taco Bell?
I think so.
Just because there's more of them.
There's more Taco Bell. There's more. Look, I love that Chipotle has a limited menu.
Yeah.
But you can get any manner of bullshit at Taco Bell, and it's great. It's the same 8 ingredients, but they're packaged in such whimsical, wonderful ways.
Yeah, they really let loose. They're like, look, no rules on how you can mix and match these different ingredients. What you can do with them. Yeah, I think I'd have to go with Taco Bell just because it's so much more ubiquitous.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think it makes me feel more joy. It sparks joy more
yeah,
than anything else.
I honestly find it funny that people always make the joke. Not funny. I guess I don't find it funny. Stupid. That people always make the joke about, like, Taco Bell, like, yeah, if you want a diarrhea, you know, to have diarrhea, not to eat diarrhea. I've never found that really to be the case with Taco Bell.
No, me neither, not at all.
And I also find that because Taco Bell has so many options, this is my big problem with Chipotle. You can't go into Chipotle for, like, a mid-afternoon snack.
Right, exactly. And you can at a Taco Bell, you can gorge yourself and feel like shit if you want. But also, like, you can just, you can have a snack. You can have a reasonable amount of food, like a normal size. You can, and also, everything costs like 99 cents each. You can buy 15 different things and then decide you only want to eat six of them. It's fine.
Variety is the spice of life. Yeah. No, the most frequent I would have Taco Bell would be at like 3 or 4 p.m. when I was like, I would be like, I like didn't eat lunch, but I'm not going to make it to dinner. But if I eat as much as I want to eat right now because I didn't eat lunch, I'm starving, then I'm going to be all screwed up. I'm going to be hungry at midnight or whatever. You can pop into Taco Bell and be like, here's $2. I want to not be very hungry anymore.
Yeah, and like, you'll be fine.
Here's 20 different options we've got for you.
They're getting rid of a lot of the stuff on their menu.
I did see that, yeah.
Including all of the potato-based
stuff. Oh, really? Oh, that
which
sucks.
Is a bummer. And I think they're making room for they're really going to make a play into like fake meat. Mm. But sometimes I'd rather a potato-based thing than a fake meat-based thing.
Yeah, their potatoes were great.
Yeah.
And like, well, I mean,
a couple weeks. Maybe we should make one last potato spuds pilgrim, a potato pilgrimage.
Yeah, have a fiesta potatoes fiesta.
Yeah. Cool. I don't know. This has been Chipotle Part 1. Tune in next week for Chipotle Part 2 on The Complete Guide to Everything. Thanks for tuning in, folks. We'll see you next week.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.